the What's the Crack podcast with Anthony Martin.
Listen in live weekly on Brighton's Radio Reverb.
See whatsthecrack.co.uk and radioreverb.com for showtimes.
This Thursday, the 14th of January, Irish comedian Jarrett Regan plays at the Comedia here in Brighton. He's performed at comedy festivals all over the world. He's been on Russell Howard's Good News and has been a regular contributor to the TV comedy scene in Ireland. In 2013, he started up what has become an award-winning and massively successful podcast, An Irishman Abroad. The Telegraph said that the podcast could turn out to be the biggest thing since Ricky Gervais picked up a laptop. I caught up with Jarrett a few days ago and had a chat about all that and more.
Here's the other thing I hate. Guys my age with kids saying to guys that don't have kids, don't have a baby, it'll ruin your life. And like, lads say it, they say, girls, you don't know, they're saying it when you're out of the room, and it's annoying, right? I could handle my mates saying it, but when your dad says it to you, that hurts a little bit. Right? And here's the truth, I'll tell you right now, as a father, I'll tell you right now, it's not true. Having a child will not ruin your life, guys. You can do away with that fear. Having a child will not ruin your life, provided you are capable of teaching that child to use an iPad and wait in the car. You can effectively live your life the exact same way that you had been living it. And if you don't believe me, you can come out to the car and ask him yourself after the show.
On the phone right now, I have Jarrett Regan. Hello, Jarrett.
Hello there. How's it going?
Good. Happy New Year. Or is it too late in January to be saying that?
I know. I think we're in plenty of time. I mean, for a lot of people now, we're at the stage where the old New Year's resolution's gone out the window. So really, once we get through everyone's New Year's resolutions, get all those put away, ruin all those ideas, then yeah, we're in the clear enough to say it to each other, I reckon.
Yeah, I think I've broken a few of mine already. So yeah, I think I should maybe wrap up using that phrase then. How's your Christmas? How was it?
Christmas was head melting. I was back in Ireland with my family and my in-laws, and with the best will in the world, they wrecked my head for the 2 weeks, and I probably wrecked their heads as well. But that's the trade-off, you know. I went back with my wife and my kid, and I mean, we don't play board games because that produces too many arguments. Instead, what we play is a long form game called Pressure Cooker.
Okay.
Where pressure just seems to build in the house until it reaches a crescendo. And for us, it's the final day. And, you know, we avoided all arguments until that last moment when we went out with a blaze of glory. It was great.
Well, that's an Irish Christmas, I guess, isn't it? It's fun. They're okay to see for a week a year, I think, sometimes, aren't they?
I think that's the decision we made, was like, probably stayed a bit too long. I'm going to go back next year for maybe a few hours and then leave.
You did a gig actually when you were back in Dublin, didn't you? You did a gig in Dundrum Mill Theatre, I believe.
That's right. I mean, I always go back and do a show when I'm there, just to kind of, I guess, partially to kind of celebrate being home because I only go home twice a year. And then also, you know, just to kind of get together friends that I like in stand-up and, you know, do a big kind of Christmas party. So that was great. It was me, Alison Spittle, Damo Clark, who's a guy on the circuit over here, Rory O'Hanlon, another guy on the circuit over here, and a fellow called Kevin McGarren, the host of Republic of Telly, which is a TV show people might know from RTE.
Yeah. And how long have you been doing comedy for? How long have you been a stand-up for?
Would you believe it? I left my day job 10 years ago.
Right.
This month. So I've been making my living from stand-up for 10 years, but didn't move to the UK until 3 years ago, just under 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So it was kind of, I left my job at a time when you could, the economy was flying and there was gigs everywhere. And then I jumped ship just as it started to wobble. But I really, like, it's not really a job in the sense that I adore it and I do it for free. It is incredible to be paid for it and to do to get to travel and do this stuff and be able to support a family, and it's great. Love it.
Yeah, you were working in graphic design, I believe, before that, weren't you?
Yeah. I mean, like, everyone's got a story of what they were in, and mine is kind of peculiar in that I was just kind of trying to do what I thought my parents would be proud of, you know, get a steady job that they'd like. But I was miserable, properly miserable there. And I knew I wasn't going to last long. But, you know, you stick around for 2 years and you're like, there's 2 years of your life gone. You're not getting back. So I actually started writing for a few different comics and late night TV shows in Ireland. And I had those numbers going by the time I left, and it just, they let me go, and I was ready to jump, so I went for it with both feet.
That's pretty good, though. You got to live the dream then, I guess, didn't you, as a comedian, as a working comedian, as you said.
Yeah, I don't know what the dream is, but I definitely, when I can remember the morning I left, and it was the first day I didn't have to put on a suit, going down and buying the newspaper and a croissant and a coffee and being like, this is living. Because I have a major issue with kind of being told. I was always a self-starter. I always wanted to have my own business if I was going to do anything. So the idea that you're now on your own schedule was just so incredible. For the first while, I just couldn't believe my luck.
And I remember you did a bit of kids' TV as well in Ireland, didn't you? How did that come about?
I tell you how that came about. Funnily enough, I knew a couple of people, and everybody knows someone working in RTE, and they've probably seen my stand-up. I think I'd done some stand-up on the telly, one of those kind of late-night shows, and they were trying to revamp young people's TV, and I knew they were, and I knew a couple of the guys involved in it, and they said, will you come in and do a tryout? And I was like, no, I have no interest in being in kids' TV on a stand-up. And they said, well, you know, you'd be interviewing people. And I loved that more than anything in the world, probably equally as much as stand-up. I love interviewing people. And I'd done a bit for a couple other bits and pieces. And I was like, well, who are the people? Is it Jedward or something? And they were like, no, your first guests are Chris Rock, Adam Sandler, Kevin James, and David Spade.
Wow.
And you're going to sit down and you have your own desk. We're going to set up this live studio audience. It'll look like a late night show. You're going to interview the boys. And I went in and it was the time of my life. Like, there was no question I was going to do it. But it was total joy. And I said, I will definitely do this job. And I signed up to it. My wife was pregnant at the time. So I was like, this is great. Steady money in the lead up to that. And then it just never reached that height again. So it was a difficult enough time, but you learn an awful lot from these weird little jobs. I did ultimately end up interviewing Jedward as well, though, so
did
I guess that was another highlight.
And how did that work out? Did I wreck your head? Or
herding cats is the way it was best described. There is actually a Jedward Wrangler on site when they're there. People don't know this, but at that particular time, there was their manager, there was their agent, their publicist, and then there was someone whose job it was to stop one from running off.
Oh God!
And like, they were climbing up things. It was great. You were like, people were like, "Is it real? Is that for real?" And you're like, "No, it's real. That's who those guys are."
So part of their job is just hiding sweets and, I guess, and sugar, I guess, was it?
No, I think they already had that first thing in the morning.
Now, you mentioned moving to England. What kind of prompted that then?
Well, like a lot of people, I guess, you know, it was the economic reality of Ireland's situation at the time was extremely bleak. Mm. Like, I mean, very, very much so for entertainment as a luxury item. So the writing was on the wall for a lot of comics around that time. For a while, I mean, we knew when things crashed that we'd feel the brunt of it.
Mm.
But you're blessed to have London on your doorstep.
Yeah.
And so many others had gone and done a great job and enjoyed their life over here. That, you know, while it was terrifying on the one hand, it could be done. And I just had actually planned on going in about 2009.
Okay.
But put that off as a result of a few other good things that happened. Like I published a couple of books, and I put it off, and I always kind of knew in the back of my head that I'd go, and then we just went for it when the time was right.
Mm. And do you think your comedy has changed since moving over here then?
Well, the thing about it is that if you're a comic in Ireland, you'll work two nights most weeks.
Yeah.
That'd be about the average. If you're a comic in the UK and you're on the circuit, you could find work every single night of the week. And that cannot help but make you a stronger comic. So I definitely say I'm a lot stronger in just the airtime. You know, you've been in air miles a lot more than you would have been. It's the funny thing about our game is that you can't but get better. Nobody gets worse. That's the thing about it. I think a lot of comics improve with age, and we're kind of seeing that with people like Mickey Flanagan and Bill Burr's and Louis C.K.'s of this world, that age is a good thing. Turmoil, all hardship, you don't get those young. So I definitely feel like moving here and the challenge of it and the struggle of it has helped the writing and the performance of it.
Yeah, and since you moved to the UK as well, you started up a podcast, An Irishman Abroad. How did that come about? How did that podcast come about?
Yeah, well, the podcast's really my baby. You know, I really started that when I was here a few months and trying to make sense of it all and trying to figure out how to do it. And like I said, I knew loads of people that had come before. I knew I had the contact numbers, I had the emails, I had conversations with people like Graham Linehan, Ned Byrne, Daryl Green, Chris O'Dowd, even like Tony Cascarino. In a weird kind of way, in the time from when I went to uni, I had been crossing paths with a lot of people because Ireland's so small. So really all I did was sit down in my bedroom, and I remember sitting on the bed ringing Graham Linehan and saying, can I do a little interview with you for this to talk about how an Irishman might make it abroad and your own journey. Recorded it and put it out as a podcast. Got a producer on board, just a guy who knows how to fix sound. You know yourself, these things have to be done to clean it up, make it sound good, because it was over the phone. We put it out and went straight to number one in the iTunes charts in Ireland, and it was on the cover of the Irish Times that week.
Yeah.
And people were just going, well, where's the next one? I had no plans for another one, but realized that I had all these contacts. And since then, 120 episodes later, a couple of awards, a couple of million listeners, and, you know, we're laughing. It really is a joyful thing, and it's covered kind of every different angle of society and culture, various different Irish people that everyone would know, from Chris O'Dowd to Cecilia Earn, Sharon Horgan, Sonia O'Sullivan, Lisa Hannigan, Boy George, you know, someone with kind of Irish heritage rather than simply being an Irishman abroad. So really, it's kind of become my bread and butter. And in a lot of ways, I don't know what I'd do without it.
Yeah, it's been a massive success. I suppose most of that is down to yourself and the way you do the interviews and the way you kind of tease them out and stuff. How does the success kind of sit with you at the moment?
Well, you know, one thing that it's done is it's brought people to the shows. And no more than Mark Maron describes, Mark's a friend of mine, and he said that, you know, he was untouchable as a comic when he started his podcast. He was really just at his last hope.
Yeah.
Maybe I can talk to people about why it's not working for him. And I, like him, have experienced a lot of people coming to the shows having enjoyed the podcast. So from that perspective, it sits with me very well. There's the other aspect of it is that there are those people that just don't know about my stand-up, and they just enjoy the interviews. And that's fine by me too, because it's good to have a couple of strings to your bow. I mean, it's a joy, honestly, to get to meet these people and get to talk to them. I mean, who gets to do that? So
yeah.
I'm very, very careful with it. I'm very, I try to really take care of it because I know that, you know, you've got to nurture these things and do right by them. And if people listen to it, they're hour-long conversations with these people, so they're long form. I mean, you know yourself that there's an awful lot of pressure on the radio to do the 7 minutes, find out about the book, what are you selling, good luck to you.
Yeah.
But in an hour with Dylan Moran, there's nowhere to hide. Dylan opens up about his life and his influences and how his life has panned out and where he is right now and how he believes comedy should be approached. I mean, that's what I was interested in, was long-form conversation, and very much that's what I have now.
Yeah. Could you ever see yourself doing the show in a different format, like a TV show or a web series, maybe?
Who knows? Who knows? I certainly wouldn't be opposed to the idea, and I am developing a few things. But really, podcasts at the moment are very healthy media.
Yeah, definitely.
So really, people always ask me, when's the TV show? And I always go, why? You know, why would we do that? You know, it's just like, name a podcast that's been turned into a TV show that's worked. I mean, the only example is Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, because that's, you know, that's pretty much a podcast filmed. And, you know, the cars are the visual. Coffee's very visual. But there's no reason, really, to make a super podcast of Irishmen Abroad. Because for me, the joy is in hearing these conversations and drifting into a long interview, such as, say, Desert Island Discs, is really listening to the voice and, you know, on your commute, feeling that you're there, earwigging on this conversation. So maybe someday, I know I'm working on a book of compiled interviews from it, highlights and bits and pieces that people don't know. But for now, there is an iPhone and Apple TV app coming out of Irishmen Abroad, where people will be able to download all the episodes, as well as premium episodes, things that people haven't heard before, or things that have disappeared from iTunes, will now be available to download in the App Store.
Well, that should be a massive success if the past 120 episodes are anything to go by. Anyway, hopefully.
Thanks, man.
Now you're playing the Comedia here in Brighton Thursday, the 14th of January. Is that part of a tour, a national tour?
I'm constantly touring, but not on tour, like a lot of comics. I'm a circuit comic. I'm the guy who goes around and plays clubs up and down the country, from the Comedy Store to the Stand up in Glasgow. And my life is literally traveling. It's one of the reasons why I get to cross paths with people and do these interviews, is that I could be in Bristol next week, and I have just one night in the Comedia where, you know, I'm emceeing. I might be doing a spot, but it's really not part of a tour, like in a Michael McIntyre sense. That's where we're all trying to get to, is to be able to tour our own shows. But it'd literally be me on a bill with a bunch of other great comics. And if anybody's been to Brighton Comedia before, then know it is one of the best clubs in the country, and Stephen Grant does an amazing job down there.
Yeah. What else is ahead for you this year then, 2016, apart from the podcast?
Sure. I am traveling to Oslo to do some shows there. I am also in Luxembourg to do stuff there. I'm going to go to New York and do some live episodes of the podcast. There is a few nights in Dubai. And then in August, I am off to the Edinburgh Festival with my solo show, where I'll also record a live episode, which we tend to do there around the 24th of August. So tons and tons and tons of stuff happening. If people want to get any more details, all they have to do is go to my website, jigser.com. That's JIGSER.com.
So another hectic year ahead for Jareth.
Yeah, that's it.
Best of luck with it, Jareth. Thanks for talking
to us
today.
Thanks a lot for talking to me. I really appreciate it. And best of luck with the show.
Thank you.